anomaly. Something that deviates from what is standard, normal or expected. An oddity, peculiarity, irregularity, inconsistency, incongruity, a rarity.
I have been a nerd since long before I could have heard that bookish girls should look and act a certain way. And I'll still be a geek when I am utterly antique, because I do not care what normal people say.
Hi, my name is Sue. I know my value, and I am an anomaly.
My name is Casey. People keep saying I'm paranoid. It must be some sort of conspiracy, and I am an anomaly.
That's such a great line.
I love that line so much. And it sums up my life very much. So, welcome to the podcast.
Yay, podcast.
Yay, podcast. So today we're discussing Agent Carter, which just wrapped up its second season, and the Netflix show, Jessica Jones. Good job, Barky. Great contribution. You want to add anything else? Oh, of course you do.
Your poor dog.
He has not had a good day.
Oh, my.
Poor thing went to the vet. He lost a tooth. He's probably going to have to wear his cone in a little bit.
Yeah, so these are the two women-led shows in the Marvel Universe and are very, very different and also surprisingly similar.
Yeah, didn't you catch on to some of the same themes when you were watching Jessica Jones for the first time over the past week?
Maybe. I've been very busy, okay?
Well, speaking of which, what have you been up to?
Well,
or what you've been doing is the name of the segment.
Seeing as we only recorded a week ago.
True.
Working. Lightsaber practice. I feel like there's got to be more than that, but I'm just exhausted. I have to say, other than getting Jessica Jones into this week and watching it all, I think that's about it for my media consumption, to be honest. I've been taking a little bit of a break from reading to catch up on some podcasts, but none that I haven't mentioned before. So, Yeah, I have nothing really exciting to promote or to squee about this time.
Yeah. I guess my life's been kind of the same, just puppets. I finished Agent Carter season 2. We bought Academy Award winning film Mad Max Fury Road on Amazon Prime.
This started a thing, didn't it?
Well, we should be actually happy that Mad Max Fury Road won Academy Awards because, first of all...
Oh, I'm not saying that.
No, I understand the inside joke that Academy Award winner Nick Cage, but Mad Max Fury Road being an Academy Award winner is actually very good because it is a genre film featuring a mostly female cast, a diverse female cast too, and it's a genre film that was nominated for Best Picture. And while it didn't win, Mad Max Fury Road is one of those movies where I'm like, yeah!
When you think of action or genre films at all, you think they don't have that much of a chance at the Oscars, but Mad Max did really well, so that was welcome.
Yeah, that's all I've been up to.
All right, then let's do this.
Transition. Transition!
So, obviously, since we're going to be talking about the season of Agent Carter that just wrapped up, as well as the first season of Jessica Jones, number one, spoiler warning. Number two, if you aren't aware, some of the content of Jessica Jones is perhaps triggering to some people. So, you know, content warning, trigger warning for sexual assault and violence and PTSD. So just be aware of that. We want to make sure that that is out there before we start talking about it.
Good job. You handled that much better than I would have. I would have made jokes. It would have been very inappropriate. Did you hear that?
It is like he's psychic. It is like he is psychic.
It's too good. It's too good. Okay. So, things.
Dude, this was your episode.
Hold on. both of these shows are very different in their content. First of all, Agent Carter, the series features Peggy Carter, who you met in Captain America, First American Soldier. I don't know the subtitle. All I know is that first main title, Captain America. and it's about Peggy balancing life as a secret agent, as well as being a single woman in 1940s America. So you have period appropriate tone, comedy, pretty costumes, lighthearted adventure, spy kind of adventure stuff, right?
For the most part, there were some serious moments in there too, but definitely more on the lighter side for Agent Carter.
Yes. And then you flip that coin to Jessica Jones, and it follows Jessica after her short-lived stint as a superhero, and that ended in a major tragedy. And since then, she's been rebuilding her personal life and career as a private detective in Hell's Kitchen, New York City. She is plagued with self-loathing, PTSD. She's an alcoholic, even though she holds her liquor pretty well. And she's trying to balance. And she herself is trying to find balance living in, you know, New York City. But it's more along the lines of no longer being a superhero and kind of staying out of that moral conflict that got her in the first place. Mm-hmm. And what's great about both shows is that they both have at least one female showrunner. There's only one showrunner for Jessica Jones, Melissa Rosenberg, who had some great quotes about the making of Jessica Jones, but also on Agent Carter, Tara Butters and Michelle Fazekas, I think is how you pronounce her name, serve as showrunners on Agent Carter. Hey, women! So you just finished both of these within the past couple of weeks. What do you think the obvious differences between Agent Carter and Jessica Jones are?
Well, man, obvious differences. Agent Carter is much more superhero-y. You know, it fits right in with the Avengers, with the real, like, evil villain that you would expect to be off the pages of a comic book. And even the way that they shoot the show and I guess do post-production, it looks, in the colors and in the saturation, like it's straight off of a comic book page. Mm-hmm. Agent Carter, excuse me, wrong. Jessica Jones is very dark and really gritty, and you have a not untypical, you know, Golden Age superhero villain character as your main villain. And it is the type of villain that's even more scary because it's somebody that could appear very close to that in real life. And I'm not saying, you know, a virus-based mind control, but that gaslighting and manipulation and controlling of someone is a very real and very dangerous thing. Whereas you're not going to find a supervillain who was influenced by Zero Matter in real life. You might find a guy who is gaslighting a naive girlfriend in real life.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay.
And also, the other major difference is that I just realized is that for the most part, Agent Carter is inspired by the world of Marvel, whereas Jessica Jones is definitely more of an adaptation, especially that first season. Peggy Carter didn't have any comic books based on her adventures, at least from what I personally feel, before Captain America the movie came out. And the villains, even though they have some ties to the comic books, they aren't quite... They're more original characters than they are, oh, look, it's this person! Did you like that gasp? Did the recorder like that gasp?
Is that true?
It feels like it. I know Finhoff and... I feel like Finhoff from the first season was based off of a Marvel character, whereas Whitney Frost, I don't think, is from the comic books. I think the concept is based off of Madame Mask, maybe, but
yeah, she's definitely based off Madame Mask, but I'm not in that comic book world.
Yeah.
So I guess that Peggy Carter was just a supporting character in the Captain America books.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what it is? She didn't have her own books.
Right. So, yeah. I mean, so they are dealing with... Agent Carter is dealing with original characters. Sousa didn't exist. Thompson didn't exist. Angie and Rose, they didn't exist. Mm-hmm. Jarvis obviously existed.
Oh, man, I love Rose.
Rose is great. She's so nice, but she can kick your ass. Oh, and I loved the addition of Samberly this season. Ah, he's so good. I love that comic, too. Matt Bronger? Mm-hmm. Funny guy. But, you know, there are characters from the comic books and Agent Carter, like... What's his face? Howard Stark.
Uh-huh.
Jarvis. I think Anna is mentioned. Anna Jarvis.
Okay.
Comic books, maybe. It's been a while since I've, you know, done heavy research into the lore, but I feel like she existed. Also, yay, more infertile ladies. Woo! So, yeah. So those are the obvious differences. So, real quick, what did you think of Jessica Jones?
It was... I mean, I enjoyed it very, very much. It was somehow different than I expected.
Yeah?
It was really easy to actually sort of binge watch. Which sometimes shows are difficult to binge watch. But the story continued in such a way that it wasn't tiring at all, and it, for the most part, held my attention in every episode.
Right. I personally loved the Jessica Jones run, and like you were saying earlier, that villain that David Tennant played is a very real, it's very real and scary thing. It's sad to me that I have met some men who didn't particularly enjoy Jessica Jones. And I'm like, I wonder why that is. Because they obviously want more female superheroes. But I think a part of it maybe it hits a little too close to home. Maybe it's just a little too real for some people who want to assume a world of superheroes where bad things don't happen. Where something that personal can't happen?
I don't know. I don't like to generalize, but I would think that most guys don't even think about that kind of behavior of other guys.
Yeah. Right?
Or don't understand what extent that manipulation in that kind of abusive relationship can get to.
Right.
You know, it's something that I think that women talk about with each other a lot and look out for a lot. But I think guys who have never seen someone who has experienced this or potentially experienced it themselves, because it's not just a women's issue, might not even realize how dangerous it is. And yeah. I think that not just guys, but I think that some people, when they are looking for superheroes, women or men superheroes, are just looking for, like, your classic stereotypical flying cape Superman, Captain America, Wonder Woman, wholesome all-American hero kind of superhero. And that is not what Jessica Jones is.
Right. No. What they want, I think, is something more along the lines of Agent Carter.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's fun. And look, Peggy Carter is feminine, but she can kick your butt.
Oh, yeah.
And it ends, you know, on a pretty happy, bittersweet, but happy note. Whereas Jessica Jones is more gritty, mm-hmm. more ambiguous. Lots of gray.
And, you know, a lot of the people who I've spoken to who didn't really enjoy Jessica Jones that much are gung-ho about Supergirl.
Yeah.
And that's why I think it's the whole, like, flying costume, wholesome hero thing that people are really into right now. And because, I mean, Grimdark has been the thing on TV for a long time right now, and I'm kind of tired of it, too. And I think that's why my reaction isn't like, I love this with Jessica mm-hmm. Jones, but more like, this was really good. And I think if I wasn't so burnt out on Grimdark, my reaction would be stronger. But, you know, just to bring in DC a little bit right now, Supergirl is what people want it to be, right? It's fun, and it's got the costume and this and that and the other thing. And I watch Supergirl and I'm like, this is close, but this is not everything I want it to be. And I think they're trying really, really hard with a lot of things, and I think it has done some really good things and had some really important conversations. But like, there was a scene maybe even a few months ago with one of the characters is a black man, and he's having this conversation as a whole episode about controlling your anger. And he gives this whole speech about how, because he is a black man, he can't get angry in public because of the cultural perceptions that surround that. And like, that's a really important conversation to have on network TV. That's fantastic. But at other times it misses the mark. Like when Jeremy Jordan's character goes on this, like, woe is me speech about being put in the friend zone. And I just sort of, like, shake my head and roll my eyes. You know, so nothing is perfect, right? Everything's a little bit hit and miss. But in terms of tone, I think that people who weren't super into Jessica Jones are looking for the type of thing that Supergirl brings.
Yeah. And I guess I can kind of understand that. To me, I saw previews of Supergirl, and based on the previews alone, it didn't attract my attention. I've heard the actress is great, but just, you know, I don't mind some lighthearted fare, but at the same time, you know, I am kind of a little dark inside. And sometimes I need that to be expressed. So I understand. Oh, yeah. Like, here's the thing. We've complained about this on Moment of Who. We're tired of the grim dark all the time on Doctor Who. But like I've said before, making a show is kind of like the high fidelity analogy of making a mixtape. I'm referencing a Nick Hornby book and movie that people may have read or seen, where you start with an upbeat song, an upbeat song, an upbeat song, and then you take it down a little bit, and then upbeat, upbeat, and then take it down a little bit with a slow song or some R&B. And the thing is that if those steps aren't taken in either your dramas or your comedies, then there's going to be some, you know, hits and misses in terms of how your show flows and how audiences react to it. Did that make sense?
Absolutely. But I think it can be argued that all of these shows that we've, all three of them that I've mentioned, bringing Supergirl into the mix, can be considered a little bit one note, yeah, at least in terms of their tone. So I get it when somebody's like, you know what, this isn't totally my bag, just by the tone of the show.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think Agent Carter and Jessica Jones are the shows we need right now, because the themes in these shows, as well as in some of the other Marvel shows, like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Daredevil, are really, you know, taking place front and center. Like, one of my favorite things about Jessica Jones and Agent Carter is that the friendships between the women characters are not competitive.
Uh-huh.
They're very supportive of each other. They're not competing over a man. They don't care. It's all about, are you hurting? Do you need to talk? Cracking jokes. Like, the main example I'm thinking of off the top of my head, because it's happened more on this show than the other one, is Jessica and Trish on Jessica Jones.
Uh-huh.
That is probably my favorite example. And the scene that kind of talks about this the best is when Jessica decides to be a superhero, and Trish is really gung-ho about it and is trying to help out, and she gets a suit. And Jessica's like, if I wear that suit, I'm going to have to change my name to Camel Toe. And, you know, they've both suffered from some sort of abuse. Trish through her mom, Jessica through Kilgrave. Yeah. And they're both there to support each other through that, which is really sweet.
Yeah, I mean, it's been studied over and over again how women are sort of conditioned to compete with one another. Not just, you know, in the attention of a man, because that is definitely not happening in Jessica Jones. It sort of happens a little bit in Agent Carter in season 2, which is unfortunate. But
mm-hmm.
In terms of jobs or promotions or just recognition, we're sort of conditioned to compete with each other. And that doesn't happen between these women. They're supportive of each other and they're helping each other.
Right.
And we need more of that on TV.
We really do. And people loved Peggy and Angie in the first season. I was kind of sad not to see Angie return, because they set it up so that way she would be Peggy's roommate. And you're like, oh, if there's a season 2, we get to see Angie on more adventures. Yay. But then they transition to Los Angeles. And I'm like, so her roommate is on the other side of the country. And she's only in one episode. Maybe it was, you know, maybe it was building the season. Maybe they wanted to add Anna Jarvis in there and a little bit of romantic tension for the Peggy Sousa relationship. And like, oh, look, Violet.
Maybe she'll be back for season 3 now that there's going to be a season 3.
Oh, has that been confirmed?
I think so. We had a whole discussion about how we were sad that it was being canceled, because that seemed to be what was likely to happen. But now everything I'm seeing this past week is about Agent Carter season 3.
This is going to sound awful, but I really hope that this is the last season, because that would just, you know, slings and arrows sort of, look, we've gone through this arc and now it's done.
So, you know, on March 1st, apparently Haley Atwell confirmed that Agent Carter would be back for season 3. And now this says 3 days ago, Marvel's Agent Carter season 3 is likely to be axed by ABC due to low household ratings. So, nobody really seems to know.
Move it to Netflix.
just give me one more season.
One more
season. I think 3 seasons is perfect. And have her establishing S.H.I.E.L.D. and we'll be good.
And marrying Daniel Sousa.
Well, that seemed to be starting towards in the finale, didn't it?
Not getting married. I want to see her
immediately get married.
I want them to snuggle and solve things together.
Is that like what the Simpsons mean when they say snuggle?
I don't watch that show.
Oh, Casey.
But to watch that show. So speaking of friendship, going away from the female friendships, the friendships that take place between men and women that have nothing to do with a possible romantic subplot, great. So the clearest example to me, and probably the best example of a platonic relationship between a man and a woman, is Peggy and Jarvis. Especially in this last season.
Well, it felt like for a while they were going to do a whole jealousy story with Anna. At least right at the very beginning. Mm-hmm. I was afraid that was going to happen. Maybe it was just me reading into it. But I'm glad they didn't.
Yeah, I didn't read that at all when I first started watching it. And I love Anna. I love Anna. I want to see more of her. Because I think the best thing about her addition to Agent Carter was she provided for Peggy, and she was married to this really nice man. And it also showed that she could still be supportive of her husband's quote-unquote adventures and still be worried about him.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, she ended up getting in the middle of that, unfortunately. But I think... Peggy and Jarvis, their friendship and relationship to each other really grew this last season. And I want to see more male and female friendships like that. Whereas in Jessica Jones, Jessica and Malcolm are, the beginning of their relationship is very tenuous because he is just a drug addict who lives in her apartment building,
mm-hmm.
and he was working for Kilgrave because he wanted the drugs, you know, the drug money.
Yeah.
But she helps him get sober, and he joins and leads the support group of survivors of Kilgrave's words. Of Kilgrave's axe.
Okay.
Axe is the best word that I could think of. You know, they save each other, which...
Yes.
Yeah. Which is nice, but I do prefer Peggy and Jarvis's relationship because they're a team.
I actually really like Jessica's relationship with Luke, sort of in the middle of the series, when they have stopped sleeping together, but they're still working together, and they're still
mm-hmm.
friendly. Like, yeah, there is other stuff swirling around in that relationship, but she said, you know what, I need to take a step back right now, and he was okay with that, and they were still okay together, and I think that is not 100% healthy, but that is a healthy part of that relationship.
Right. Yeah. Can't really have a healthy relationship with Jessica Jones when she killed your wife. Whoopsies. And what I love about both these shows is that they're not afraid to go for, and in the Marvel universe in general, there are interracial relationships, which I love. Like, clearly there's Luke and Jessica. Mm-hmm. There was Peggy and Wilkes in this past season mm-hmm. as a subplot. But going into other shows, there's May and her ex-husband. I can't remember. Andrew. Mm-hmm. May and Andrew.
Well, and not Peggy. Agent Carter, the show name, not the character name.
Yes.
Actually worked towards dealing a little bit with the lack of diversity that everybody was complaining about after season one.
Yes.
And, yeah, they had to put in an explanation as to why somebody would hire a black scientist rather than a white scientist in the 40s, but they did, and it was reasonable, and it was historically accurate, and that's what historical accuracy is. Because it's not like there were no people of color who were scientists.
Yeah.
There were plenty.
But also, it seems like, you know, the actor Enver Jokaj, who plays Susa on the show and was previously on Dollhouse, he's an Albanian American. And then I looked this up. Susa is derived from Portuguese origins. So you could argue that Susa could be a non-white character, and he doesn't have a leg. So he is like diversity wrapped up into one delicious cinnamon roll of a character.
And actually, I was just looking up some details from the Diversify Agent Carter hashtag, because people claim historical accuracy for lack of diversity, and that just, it needs to stop. Because there were black congressmen in the U.S. from the 1870s forward. The first black FBI special agent was appointed in 1919. Federal jobs were integrated by Roosevelt in 1941. In 1948, Truman appointed the first black federal judge and stated that there shall be equality of treatment and opportunity for all persons in the armed forces without regard to race, color, religion, or national origin. And by the end of the Korean War, almost every unit in the military was integrated. So, because history is not a reason.
Yeah. And you know what? In Jessica Jones, they turned a male character into a lesbian.
Woo!
Woo! So, my husband actually loves the character of Jerry a lot. It's probably because she's a lawyer. That may be the only
reason.
She really is.
Ruthless.
I do not like her, but I really enjoy the way her character is written. Because she is not a goddamn saint. And actually, none of the women in this, in either show, are saints. I mean, when Peggy basically committed treason to help out Howard Stark. You know, rather than going to the SSR and being like, hey, my friend's in trouble.
Yeah.
Can we help him? Trish is a former drug addict from her child star days and Jessica Jones. Then you go into just straight gray, where Jessica is an alcoholic. She's abrasive and physically aggressive. She has no problems with taking her crazy neighbor and just kind of pinning her to the wall and being like, I don't care what crazy, kinky shit you're into, just shut up. And then you get to Jerry, who is, would you say she's lawful neutral? Because I don't even know. Maybe she's lawful evil, where she abides by the law, but she can tweak it just a little bit.
But she doesn't abide by the law.
True.
I mean, we see right from the beginning, almost, that she bribed a juror.
in
her first big case. You know, she is acting in her own interests.
Right. I remember now. It's been a while.
Is that chaotic?
It could be.
I don't know. Yeah. I've never fully clicked with those descriptions of characters, the lawful good or everything.
Yeah.
So she is conniving and out for herself. That's what she is.
Yeah.
So wherever that falls.
Yeah, she's also an asshole.
Yeah.
To both her ex-wife and her current lover. Now ex-lover. Because she was just like, yeah, my lover killed my wife in cold blood. Or out of passion. Not, you know, self-defense. Which
right,
it was.
But then Pam still broke up with her.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is amazing.
Good. Good job, Pam. And then you have Agent Carter is actually where it's a little more light gray versus so dark gray. It's practically black gray because you get Dottie Underwood, who was a part of the Black Widow program.
Well, and see, that's where it's more classic comic booky.
Yeah.
Right? You've got a much more clear line between good and evil in Agent Carter than you do in Jessica Jones.
Right. Especially Whitney. And actually, at the end of season two, I felt kind of bad for Whitney. Because you see her origin story, which is, you know, she's a scientist who moved to Hollywood and was like, I'm going to live off of my beauty and become an actress and a politician's wife. And then she finds her way back to science with zero matter invading her body and face.
Well, I was under the impression that she never left science. She was the brains behind the corporation that I can't remember the name of.
Yeah, but she couldn't do it openly.
Well, right.
And you know, mostly the scientists there were taking over that. Mm-hmm. That was my impression.
I loved that character.
I did too. She was great. She was so good. I was very confused about the relationship with her husband at the very beginning, though, because at first it seemed like they were in a loveless marriage, and then they seemed to love each other, well, even though he had an affair.
She was an award-winning actor.
She was. But then he showed up in her crazy dream at the very end, where she's in the asylum. And they're like lovey-dovey in her head. And I'm like, I don't understand. I don't know. I think that's what I like best about both of these shows. And maybe one of the reasons I'm not quite drawn to Supergirl or any of the other superhero shows going on right now featuring women is because it's very clear to me that even though these are the quote-unquote good guys, they are not necessarily good people all the time.
You want more shades of gray in your media.
I really do like the color gray. I really do. I just think we're at this point where some imperfections are needed, some vulnerabilities are needed in our character development, which is the problem with the term strong female character, which Jessica and Peggy clearly are, but they're also slightly broken.
Right. It's like the conversation we had when we talked completely about strong female characters and Mary Sue's, mm-hmm. that strong does not mean physically strong. Although that is a great aspect of a character, that's not needed for someone to be a strong character. A strong character is a well-rounded, well-thought-out, complete human being. Or alien, for that matter.
Or mermaid. We're not discriminating.
Right. And a vulnerability doesn't just mean, you know, a physical vulnerability. it can be emotion.
And it's not just romantic.
No.
You could say that Jessica's vulnerability is her relationship with Trish, her friendship. It's her past, the fact that she lost her parents and she had to be raised by Trish's mom, who was an abusive D-bag.
I mean, for some people, the vulnerability is just being honest.
Yeah.
And that's what we need. We don't need cookie-cutter perfect characters. We need characters who are real people.
Yeah, we need genuine. And I think that's what these shows are doing right, in my personal opinion. That's why I wanted to cover these two in particular, because they share the same themes, and they both have the message that I like, which is inequality not only in strengths, but also imperfections. That women are just as capable of being good as they are of being evil.
Mm-hmm.
That they're just as capable of being emotionally strong as they are, emotionally weak. And I think you see that best in Peggy and in Jessica. Peggy, you could say, is emotionally strong with, a little bit here and there, whereas Jessica has just been through the ringer emotionally. And even though she puts on the face of sarcasm, slightly bitchy, it's like armor to protect her, which I really like about her. I really love Kristen Ritter in Jessica Jones. She did an amazing job.
It kind of blows my mind that through most of this show, she does not have a door that locks or is secure in any way.
That's kind of funny to me.
It's scary.
Especially in Hell's Kitchen. Yes. But as you can see, she can take care of herself for the most part.
Yeah, but still. You don't want to wake up with even somebody you know and trust in your apartment who was not there when you went to sleep.
Right.
No. No, thank you.
Oh, my God. No. So, based on what we just talked about, is television the best venue for women-driven superhero shows and other genre fiction? Do you think it's because more risks are being taken on television now? Do you think it's the growth demanded for these characters is probably more viable in the TV medium? What do you think it is?
I think that bigger stories belong on TV because yes. You have the time to tell them. Even a short season, quote unquote, is 13 episodes. So you're talking, not quite 13 hours, probably like 11 and change, right? Because they're not actually all 60 minutes long. But I mean, that's where you can explore bigger themes and really get to know the characters. And the more that we're getting better storytelling on TV, the more and more superficial movies seem to me.
Right.
However, the point remains that movies are really the big money makers. Like, big summer blockbuster superhero films are what every studio wants. So it would be great if they could make a Black Widow film or another, female superhero film that blew all the other films out of the water and brought in the money and could prove that people will go see a superhero film led by a woman. Because mm-hmm. that is what we keep hearing, is that Hollywood doesn't want to take the, quote, risk of having a female-led superhero film. Which doesn't make any sense, because just look at the Hunger Games franchise.
Right.
So, yeah. But, in terms of where will we get the better content, we'll get it on TV. where is it mm-hmm. more important for the stories to succeed? I think that answer is film.
Yeah. And I really do hope that Mad Max Fury Road is a turning point in that. Mm. Because everyone went in expecting to enjoy Tom Hardy as Max kicking butt, but they left talking about Furiosa.
Right.
And I think with the Wonder Woman movie coming out eventually, and Captain Marvel is definitely in the cards. Mm-hmm. I think we should be getting those movies before the craze for superhero movies dies down. Because so far it seems like people are starting to have superhero fatigue, kind of like they had zombie fatigue. Right. And they had vampire fatigue.
Right.
And then it will make its circles again.
Although it seems to me like superhero fatigue is happening faster than any of the others.
Well, when you have one successful franchise, everyone wants to jump on the franchise train.
Yeah, maybe studios are just quicker to jump on things now than they were 5-10 years ago.
Well, they also sit on the rights like nobody's business.
Yes,
so that when
yes,
the craze,
they
when the craze comes back around, they're like, oh, push them out. And then they die and they're like, all right, we're just going to put these in boxes and sit on them again.
Until the next time superheroes matter.
Yes. Bring out the vampires, they're back.
Man, several years ago, I was bored and poking around on Yahoo Answers, right? And came across this question from somebody who had to be like 13. Right? I don't know for sure, but probably. And it was, the question was like, why does everybody hate on these on the Twilight books? I mean, this is like the first time that vampires are really popular. You should be enjoying it. And all of these answers were from like kind of your like old school Usenet people who were like Bram Stoker and oh my gosh, what's her name? Interview
Anne
with the
Rice?
Vampire.
Anne Rice.
Bram Stoker and Anne Rice. And just listing off all of these times that this monster was the popular monster of the time. And it was like, before you make claims about things being first, maybe look into the history of the thing. Or at least qualify it, which is what I try to do, with first in my recollection.
Right. Oh, goodness.
It every now and then, something reminds me of that, and I laugh. Not that I think that... And for the most part, the responses to this question were civil. And they were trying to be a little more, I want to educate you than I want to slap you down. But, and that's how it should be in approaching that situation. But it still is somewhat amusing. Also because I know that I have been there in my fandom life.
Yep. Man, this was a pretty serious podcast.
It happens from time to time. Very
it does.
Different from National Treasure.
Very different from National Treasure. Featuring Academy Award winning actor Nicolas Cage.
Oh, so fun.
Almost too fun.
Do you have any more to say? I know this was the thing that you were really looking forward to.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm just looking forward to... if we get more of Agent Carter, we're definitely getting more of Jessica Jones. Uh-huh. I'm looking forward to those stories continuing and seeing more in the future of women in superhero films and superhero TV or fantasy, whatever, being more like Jessica and Peggy.
Yeah, I am... pleased, I'll say, that Marvel is aiming some of this superhero type content more towards adults.
Mm-hmm.
With things like Daredevil and Jessica Jones and Deadpool and even, you know, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. to some degree. Whereas you can watch Agent Carter easily with, like, a preteen and not have to worry about much. The stuff that is ending up on Netflix, which is a great place for it, is definitely more for adults. And not necessarily just because of sexual themes, but just because of adult content, actual adult content. Things right. like PTSD and issues of consent and things that raise bigger questions in real life and not just in comic book life.
Yeah.
And I think it's awesome that we're going there in terms of television content.
Mm-hmm. I would also recommend Daredevil to you because, for one thing, the character you met at the end of season one of Jessica Jones, Claire,
mm-hmm.
she actually appears first in Daredevil, and I love her. She's just a recurring character rather than a regular. And she is coming back for Luke Cage, which is a series all about Luke.
Wait. Isn't Claire... Which one's Claire?
Claire's the nurse at the very end of the series.
Okay. Yes. Mm-hmm. Sorry. I watched it in a day.
That's fair.
Oh, so that's why she says, you're not my first.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool. I mean, that is also something that has been on my list, and I just haven't gotten to it yet, because my list is so long. So long.
I know. You need to work on that list.
I need time.
Well, there's always your lunch break.
I don't get those anymore.
Oh, no. Oh, my gosh. All right. So, next time, what are we talking about?
So, next time on Anomaly Supplemental, we are actually going to be re-releasing an episode from 2012, and that is our character analysis of Star Trek The Next Generation's Data. So that'll be back in the feed almost a full 4 years later and sort of in celebration of the 50th anniversary of Star Trek this year. So there'll be a little extra Star Trek sprinkled throughout the year this year.
Sue does like her Star Trek.
I like Star Trek.
You do.
Okay.
All
okay.
right.
Okay.
Okay. I feel very attacked.
Oh, my.
One day we'll have a supplemental all about RuPaul's Drag Race.
We also like RuPaul's Drag Race. And after that, since the episode will be coming out right before tax day, we're going to lighten things up a little bit and talk about the terror that flaps in the night, Darkwing Duck.
When there's trouble, you call DW.
Darkwing Duck.
Woo!
Let's get dangerous.
Dangerous. Oh my god, I need to see if that's on the ukulele site. I'm obsessed with my ukulele now.
That's awesome. Oh, and then, just as a heads up, for the episode that's going to be released on May 15th, we have decided to discuss the book Every Anxious Wave by Mo Daviau, is how I'm guessing that name is pronounced. It's Daviau. And the description I have found of this book that made me suggest it to Casey is, it's like the time traveler's wife on speed, an exhilarating relic across space and time with some good old-fashioned romance and 90s indie rock thrown in along the way. Shortly after Chicago bar owner Carl Bender stumbles upon a wormhole in his closet, he inadvertently strands his closest friend Wayne in Manhattan, circa 980 CE, and must enlist the help of a hot and edgy astrophysicist to get him back. So, clearly, this is, I think, going to be right up our alley. So if you're interested in this book discussion, you can pick that up. We have already added it to the Goodreads group. And again, that will be the discussion on May 15th.
Neither of us have read it. So we are going to be very excited.
Yep.
And hopefully not disappointed.
And let us know if you want to share thoughts on Agent Carter and Jessica Jones, on Lieutenant Commander Data, on Darkwing Duck, on anything. We love to get comments. Comments are fun. Even on Academy Award-winning actor Nicolas Cage.
Yes, we will accept comments on Academy Award-winning actor Nicolas Cage. And maybe you can let us know you're commenting us on... send us a comment on Twitter. I don't know.
We did get Twitter comments about how people were excited about your ukulele.
I know, right? I'm excited too, guys. Also, I think that for comments from now on for supplemental, we should have the hashtag Academy Award winning actor Nicolas Cage. Or Academy Award winner Nicolas Cage.
All right.
That will never not be funny to me. We should make shirts.
And it will always be true.
Oh, God.
All right, I'm done.
Me too. I was serious, and then I referenced Nicolas Cage, and now everything's even in the world.
Yay.
Yay. I'm Casey.
I'm Sue.
And you have been listening to Anomaly Supplemental.
Yay!
So serious.
All right.
But I'd rather indulge my many passions, even if my squaritude's a little too pronounced. Perhaps I...
If you wish to contact Anomaly Supplemental, you can at the email address, which is moregirlygeeks@gmail.com. That's girlygeeks with a Z at gmail.com. Or if you like hearing the sound of your own voice, like I do, you can call the voicemail line at 248-419-GEEK. Yes, it's one of those numbers that you can use alphabets on, and that's 248-419-4335. To stay up to date with Anomaly and Anomaly Supplemental News, you can follow them on Twitter at Anomaly Podcast. That's the at symbol, A-N-O-M-A-L-Y Podcast. That's all one word. Check out the Anomaly blog for geeky articles and Anomaly Supplemental show notes. Find it online at anomalypodcast.com. To meet other anomalies, please join the Anomaly forums. Click on the forum icon at anomalypodcast.com. The theme music is used by permission of Marion Call. Thank you, Marion. Find out more at marioncall.com. Or, of course, you can follow her on Twitter at Marion Call. That's MarianCall. Anomaly was created under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivative Works 3.0 Unported License. Oh, say that three times fast.
And I won't ever play it cool, so I won't ever once be bored. Oh, I have been a nerd since long before anyone heard that fair and scrawny was the latest fashion trend. And I still be a geek after nobody thinks it's chic, because I don't require approval.
So. All right, then let's do this.
Yeah! Transition.
Whenever you yell into your microphone, it messes up the recording. No, it's like, yeah, Seriously, it's like it can't handle it.
It can't handle my excitement. And it's beautiful.